The Around the NFL Podcast.
Desperately wants to be friends with Bruce Arians.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
How are you?
Seems to have some existential angst today.
Dan's already used his best material before the show's even started, screaming out, "We're going nowhere!"
That's how I feel.
You have issues with the trajectory of the show.
No. In fact, I'm very happy about the show, especially our most recent episode. Of course, Lil Debbie was our special guest on Wednesday, and what a great time that was. And Mark Sessler, you made it all happen. You pulled all the strings. And I think Mark, guys, back me up. Mark was floating out of the studio and then all the way back to his home on Wednesday. In fact, I picture inside Mark's mind as he was walking down a West LA street, just like this at all times. Just this is in your mind, and you're skipping, and I can almost picture you turning into a Japanese anime character.
This is just the next installment of you creating a fake character out of me.
I don't know. I think there's something to it. It was almost like you created something, Mark. You created this connection with Little Debbie that just seemed like this fanciful mind game, and then suddenly here she was appearing in the studio before you.
I thought it was a very surreal experience. I don't know how else to put it, and I think that, you know, I was relatively silent for the first 7 or 8 well, minutes, and I have no memory of it, to be honest. I don't.
You don't have much experience in your performance art becoming reality.
I thought you guys, the three of you, I listened to it last night. I thought, number one, she was an excellent sport. She was the tweets were getting tell us that people loved her. But the three of you picked up the slack in a massive way for about 8 to 9 straight minutes. I don't even remember. It was strange. I'm not saying it's like, oh, I'm so into Little Debbie. It's just like it was a very bizarre thing, and I don't know what was wrong with
it. That's my favorite part about it is afterwards you saying that you were blacked out for the first 8 or 10 minutes.
I did, and I rewatched it. It's on NFL.com, and if you go on our Around the NFL page on Twitter, you could find the link and watch Little Debbie in studio. I was watching it last night with my lovely wife, and she actually decoded an all-time Chris Wessling banger of a joke. You referenced Chuck Norris.
Well, yeah, I know
the Chuck Norris meme, the first meme ever.
I know that Greg decided to play referee on all my jokes yesterday.
Oh,
I didn't play referee. That
yeah,
was
you did.
Wasn't that yes? Was that yesterday or was
yeah,
that
you
Monday?
Did. That
what
was
did
yesterday.
I say?
What
did I say?
My old Dirty Tuesday joke was that.
Oh good. Yeah. Well. I just wanted to make sure everyone knew. You always complain about people stepping on your jokes. We heard it.
The Chuck Norris bit went over my head, and then
I'll have you know that my fan base appreciated that.
I didn't say anything about the Chuck Norris thing. This is Dan's ballywick.
I love the Chuck Norris joke because it
didn't catch it.
It had not. No one has made the Chuck Norris bit since like 2001. I was in college when it happened.
I feel like it was a good. It was the right time for it. We were talking Pokemon and phones, you know.
Well,
you did a good job, Chris.
It was fun.
Thank you.
It was fun. It was
I'm glad your
fun.
Wife appreciated it. Well, maybe she didn't even appreciate it.
She was able. I'll just say she was able to decode it.
Thank you.
That
I
is.
Know
a,
what that, I just decoded what that means.
Yeah, that is not a resounding endorsement.
I still love you, Wes. I just
thank
know
you.
It, you know. No, none of us are innocent. We don't all hit home runs.
I hear you.
But we did yesterday as a group. Today's show. You got to keep moving though. There are no reverse gears in this tank. And this is the Thursday edition of the Around the NFL podcast sponsored by no one. And I will tell you what, good show today. We're going to talk about some running backs that are primed to bust out. And this does tie in, though not officially, maybe a satellite to our big time 2016 fantasy extravaganza week. So take close attention or keep close attention to the names that we throw out here. And then we'll check in a little later in the summer to see if these players we throw out that we believe are going to really become big-time contributors this season, either guys that had down years or guys that just kind of weren't noticed and deserve notice. That's what this segment is about. Is that right, Wes?
It's this year's Doug Martin, or this year's Mark Ingram, or this year's Ryan Matthews, the year before that. Every year, if you're watching the preseason games, if you subscribe to our Game Pass and see these games, you can tell that there's one running back running way differently than he did in years past. And I think we're all just going to kind of guess which one it will be and then maybe revisit after three or four preseason games.
Weren't you saying yesterday to Aaron Coscarelli of NFL HQ fame that running backs are the only position that you watch in the preseason, among other facts that you were espousing?
I don't know what you're getting at there, but
no, I'm just saying I picked up that nugget because it's something for maybe other fantasy fans to pick up on.
I think we all overrate the preseason, especially quarterback play, but running backs, I think you can tell something about them.
Also, we are going to talk about the Hall of Fame, Brett Favre, amongst others, going into Canton this weekend. So Greg wrote a banger. Hall of Fame tweeners to Hall of Fame bangers is what I call this segment that we're going to talk about. These are players that are close to having the Canton credentials but aren't quite there yet, and they need a little push. Greg wrote a banger, so we'll talk about that. And also, speaking of Greg, we still got to talk about it because it got bumped yesterday. Greggy does Dallas.
Oh, no.
What?
We somehow have already topped yesterday's show.
That is absurd.
Dan is so happy with himself right now.
A play, of course, on Debbie Does Dallas.
Yeah. No, I got it.
Famous adult film from the 70s.
But with a more...
Your era, guys.
It's a much better, you know...
Wes saw that in the
theater. It's not our era. Just a more alluring lead character this time in Greg Rosenthal.
Right. Yeah,
very, you just very. Unpacked for 2 minutes there a much better joke than my Chuck Norris jokes, I'm sure.
The Norris joke worked on a level. It was kind of like an ironic. Well, there was no irony to the joke. It wasn't subversive.
We're back here?
It was on the surface. But maybe, you know, it will come around one day. One day it will click with me, and I'll have a good laugh, maybe on my deathbed. Behind the glass, what's up, Irishman?
It's amazing how much happier we are one day after Lil Deb was here. She brought this whole awesome energy vibe here, and I haven't seen you guys like this in a long time.
Well, why don't we check back in with Mark's brain again? What's going on in his subconscious? Still a party.
I don't see – I don't feel that way. I was, like, backed into a corner as this, like, creepy super fan. I was like, how do I get out of that, you know?
Well,
I wish you weren't a liar.
I wouldn't call you creepy, but you – all right, let's do some news.
You're saying he should have brought his 4- and 5-year-old children?
Totally. I love kids.
Show?
Next time.
Next time, yeah.
The Kansas City Chiefs have found some insurance at their quarterback position. The Chiefs have agreed to terms with former Rams quarterback Nick Foles, Mike Garofalo reported. The Cowboys and Vikings were also interested in Foles. But guess what? At the end of the day, Andy Reid, with his ties to Nick, that must have sealed the deal. And immediately Foles steps in and becomes the backup quarterback to Alex Smith. Chris Wessling, your thoughts on this deal?
Well, first of all, you looked at me when you read that opening sentence. I did not write that opening sentence.
It's got your byline on it.
A little peek behind the curtain. Sometimes when we get home for the day, the desk has to gerrymander our copy a little bit.
Okay.
That's what happened here.
So you don't stand by that lead?
What was the lead again?
It was a very nice pinch-hitting appearance by Jeremy Bergman down
there. Oh, wow. Now you're just calling
him out.
Well, wait. Maybe it was great. Can I hear it again? I wasn't listening the first time.
Yes. The Kansas City Chiefs have found some insurance at the quarterback position.
I love it.
It's fine.
It's how you get right in.
I said it was a very nice pinch-hitting appearance by Jeremy Bergman.
Should have just owned it and took it.
It's not my writing. I don't write like that.
All right. Anyway, Wes, your thoughts on the move?
Well, I thought it made a lot of sense. We've been talking about this for a week, that he's probably going to end up back with Andy Reid again, who drafted him and tried to trade for him once he landed in Kansas City. So he chose familiarity with Andy Reid and that offense over perhaps a better opportunity in Dallas.
Well, I think they've found some insurance at the quarterback position. Well said.
He's right.
Maybe that's just all it is. Cowboys, I would think the Cowboys probably were upset they weren't able to get a deal done here because they, obviously with the injury to their backup quarterback, this seems like, it felt like a good fit, put it that way. Nick Foles could slide in there and be an upgrade at their position behind Tony Romo. Now they have to keep digging. And to that point, Connor Orr wrote a banger headline, "Are there better options for boys than Josh McCown?" And honestly, I don't even know if he wrote it. Wes has turned my world upside down, but this does have his name attached to copy, and he's throwing out some names of other quarterbacks that don't have jobs right now. And you guys, let me know if any of these names would entice you if you were Jerry Jones.
All right.
Josh Johnson.
What?
No!
I didn't even make the list.
Of course not.
Well, he was going through just the available kind of free agent guys.
No.
I don't think Connor
is
a great quarterback.
Actually a member of the Ravens, so I guess he could probably be had for a cheap price. Matt Flynn.
No.
T.J. Yates?
No.
Mike Glennon?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Bucks aren't letting him go.
Costs too much.
Mike Vick?
No.
No.
So those are the options. Not great.
Well, I think the Josh McCown, yes. The point is that if you don't go the route of trying to trade for someone's veteran that they're willing to part with, there's nothing out there.
Mark, please tell me the Browns aren't going to trade Josh McCown. You got to protect yourself. RG3 is not going to be good.
I couldn't agree more that I would not trade him this season because you're giving away what could be your best quarterback. I'm not saying he's your long-term answer. If the Cowboys are going to try to float a seventh-round pick for Josh McCown, I wouldn't trade him.
I couldn't disagree more. The Browns are going nowhere this year. They've essentially made that clear, and they won't give him a chance to fight for the starting job, so give him to somebody else.
I'm not going to give him away for a seventh round pick. You want to give him something?
If you give a fifth round pick for
all
Josh
right,
McCown, who you're not going to use.
The Cowboys are desperate. You better get worth for the deal. You don't just give away Josh McCown for nothing just because the Cowboys want to play.
I agree. There is a certain price where then it's worth it, and I think it's going to happen because Ian Rapoport, our NFL media insider, said the Browns just didn't. They're willing to trade McCown. They just thought the Cowboys weren't willing to give enough, and the Cowboys think
that's
the price
fair.
Is too high.
That's what I'm
that's
saying.
Fair,
you're
but
not
the Browns,
a farm team.
That's fair, but the Browns don't think he's valuable.
No.
They're not even giving him a chance to start.
He's not going
to
be on that team.
My side in this is just you can't just go 2-14, 3-13 forever. They're trying to build something. I know they're not a Super Bowl contender, the Cleveland Browns, but you cannot put all your eggs in the RG3 basket. You just can't do it. And McCown at least is a capable backup.
Backup quarterback is a luxury for a rebuilding team. Draft picks are a necessity for a rebuilding
team. To me, they already made that decision. They haven't announced it, but RG3 is their quarterback. They don't really want Josh McCown. I would be surprised if Josh McCown is on that roster in week one. If you're willing to trade him on August 4th, that generally means you're out the door.
Well, because –
I don't want to say it's a tank, but it's like if you are going to go into the season with RG3 as your starter, Cody Kessler and Austin Davis, you have no interest in winning more than three games.
I do not think that anything about Hugh Jackson says that they're tanking.
No.
But I just don't think they inherited Josh McCown. He's 37 years old, and if they can get value for him, they'll trade him. They've traded all sorts of things for draft picks. My only point is just because the Cowboys want this, hey, we're not the Montreal Expos of the 1990s.
Really
we're not just your farm team. Well, everyone's like, oh, the Cowboys want Josh McCown. Oh, send him right out the door. Give him something back. Don't get fleeced. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think anybody thinks that's what's happening.
I'm just saying it's not just Jerry Jones wants to fill a position. Oh, just call up Sashi Brown, and there you go. It's
one last point.
McCown grew up
with Sashi.
Wes, you're a big fan of Josh McCown. You think he is a capable quarterback.
I think he's the ideal backup for Tony Romo, and I think the Browns don't want him. The Browns aren't even playing fair
with
him.
Is he the best quarterback on their roster?
On the Browns roster?
Yeah.
From everything we've seen the last 3 years, of course.
So why are you giving away the guy that gives you the best chance?
Because the Browns don't think the Browns are not being fair with him. They're not allowing him to compete. And if you don't want him, if you don't value him, trade him to somebody who does value him. And I agree with Mark. Shouldn't do it for a seventh-round pick. But if it's a fifth-round pick, maybe you do it.
All right, moving on. Navarro Bowman's got a new deal with the San Francisco 49ers. A 3-time Pro Bowl linebacker signed a 4-year extension with the 49ers. The team announced Wednesday the deal is worth $11 million per year with $20 million guaranteed, according to Rap Sheet. Rappaport added the linebacker will get an extra $6 million over the next 2 seasons, followed by $3.5 million in 2018. A lot of numbers there. And here's the question, Greg Rosenthal. Navarro Bowman led the league in tackles last year, but a lot of people that follow the game closely and watch the tape say he was not the same player and after missing over a year with a knee injury. Was it the right move to lock him down when, he might not be Navarro Bowman anymore?
I think they did make the right move, and I think they were looking for something positive on this team to do. Towards the very end of the season, they believed that the old Navarro Bowman was back. And that was a nasty injury that we all remember that he had. And it's not a surprise. It took him a while. Towards the end of the year, I mean, this guy has incredible instincts. And towards the end of the year, he showed the athleticism. You've seen him all offseason in the building. So I think they think he's back to being his old self. And that's one of the best inside linebackers in football.
I think the most surprising part is he had 3 years left on his deal.
Right. What was
the urgency?
I honestly believe it was what I started with, was they wanted something positive. Who are the 49ers right now? What are we? Like, who do you think of when you think of the 49ers? I think from ownership on down, I think they identify this guy. This is what we're all about. This is a great player who's a great guy, and we think he's going to have a great career. Let's reward him and have something positive.
He's the only star left from a roster full of stars 2 or 3 years ago.
But I can't take it anymore, by the way. Because I gave you a bunch of numbers about this, but also floating around out there was that this guy, they say he signed a 7-year, $77 million contract. That's what these numbers – talk about the CBA, that changes need to be made to help out the players and get the game on better footing. We need to have I've said this before, an NFL media insider – come to Jesus moment, and that's all the agents are there and the media insiders and everybody involved with the game. I want real contract figures. I want it.
You know, last night, late at night, I'm lying on the couch and I'm looking at Twitter, and up pops this tweet from Dan. Don't know how it's different than the others, but Bowman's fake contract terms has put me over the edge.
Ah!
I was like, that is a super football specific from
Wait,
Dan.
That's real?
Dan tweeted that at like 10 at night. I was blown away.
That was less believable than some of the texts I sent you last week.
I agree.
For some reason, it got to me.
So what was
so
it?
Annoyed by this.
You said 7 years, $77 million. What is it really?
I think our reporting
is
a little more plugged in, which is $20 million guaranteed, that it's worth $11 million per year. But I don't know. Who knows?
I move to make the rule that we only report signing bonuses from now on.
Well, and fully guaranteed money.
No, because even then, like, nobody knows the fully guaranteed.
Right, there's this two worlds of guaranteed money.
Well, I used
money.
To be really into this. Like, I like the
but
whole
fully
contract
fully guaranteed
thing.
Doesn't come out until, like, a week or two later.
Right, now I'm at the point where I barely pay any attention to it off the bat, and I wait 2 days later, and then you see what the deal
by then
is,
nobody
then
cares.
Well, but it's a nod towards Greg's thought that it's a PR move, not a PR move, but it's a positive bit of business before the season starts.
And to my point, our paragraph on our website, the paragraph that gives the details, there are four figures in this one paragraph, four lines, $11 million in there, $20 million in there, $6 million in there, $3.45 million in there, all different years. It's all a bunch of gobbledygook.
Well, and the average fan is going to go right past that
Bergman.
Paragraph.
No, that has nothing to do with Bergman. It's the entire industry.
Right.
And it's all the glad-handing and the agents and the insiders. Let's get this right.
Well, Greg's suggestion, if I'm hearing you correctly, is we're going to have to create another podcast segment once a week just to discuss the previous podcast contract.
I don't believe that anyone.
That's right. We have no reverse shift gear in this car.
Who's going to want to talk next week about the real Navarro Bowman figures?
Well, I don't believe that the public is interested in that. My vantage point is just you don't even need to get into it because off the bat, we don't need to talk about all the money right off the bat because you just don't know what's real, what's not. Usually the day of, just ignore it all.
Let's move on.
By the way, Jeremy Disgusting. Bergman does a great job.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, you keep it. Raising Point him up as a straw man, but no, we all agree he's one of the best writers we have.
Way to go, Bergatron.
Michael and Martellus Bennett in the news this week. They gave a interview, really one of those profiles where they follow the athlete or athletes around their native habitat. This was West L.A. and Hollywood. Mina Kimes wrote the piece, very good, in ESPN, the magazine, and both brothers didn't hold back. And first of all, let me just say something about Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett and I have history, as people that listen to this podcast know. He was a to me at the Super Bowl. That's common knowledge.
Well, he talked about your
He talked about this, yes. Well, all right, let's not get into it.
Okay.
Water under the bridge. My point is, I do, on balance, I do like that Michael Bennett and his brother are in the NFL because they at least speak their mind and they reject the teachings of the Russell Wilson School of Professional Jock Speak. These guys gave a very open interview where they discussed both their opinions about the league, and then there was a kind of a name recognition portion of the interview, and that's what kind of went viral yesterday in social media, where Kimes threw out some names and the brothers reacted. So I'm just going to go down this list here. You guys can stop me whenever you want. Jay Cutler, Michael Bennett says, worst quarterback in the NFL. Martellus says, and remember, Martellus was a teammate for the last 3 years before going to New England. I'd be open and he'd throw into double coverage.
I appreciate those comments.
Eli Manning, Martellus, this was good. Eli, he's cool. He's like a normal white guy you see at the park trying to teach his kids how to play soccer, and you know he can't really play soccer himself.
That seems accurate.
I wish I had used that as the lead of my case against Eli Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy.
It is.
That's him in a nutshell.
That's a Hall of Fame backhanded compliment. Brock Osweiler, Michael Bennett, I've got more sacks than he has touchdowns. Martellus, I've caught more balls than he's completed. Both are accurate, those statements. J.J. Watt, dominant player, Michael says. Martellus says corny. Half the NFL is corny, though. And then Michael adds, people love J.J. Watt, but they don't really like J.J. Watt. You know what I'm saying? We do.
Know what you're saying. That was a George Strait song.
Well done.
Sam Bradford, and this came with a grin for both brothers. Michael, the greatest quarterback in the NFL. Martellus, vicious, competitive. Michael, a real Joe Montana.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
What was the history, again, Wes, with the Bennetts and Sam Bradford?
Well, when Sam Bradford decided he was going to take his ball and go home and he wouldn't report to Eagles OTAs, Michael basically eviscerated him.
Oh, yeah.
And said that would never fly in Seattle.
Also, Michael, who, even though I've set aside my personal issues with him, has been bitching about a contract for what feels like 20 years now.
Yes.
It must eat him up that Sam Bradford is one of the highest paid football players of the last 10 years while he can't get a simple raise to match
his ability.
Ability. And finally, Tom Brady, Martellus says, the silver fox you never get to see but you hear about. You only get to take one photo and you have to stay outside for a year just to get it.
I believe he's...
Decode that, Greg.
He's conflating a silver fox with a snow leopard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think a silver fox is an attractive older man.
Yeah.
Which Tom Brady is.
He blew it.
Snow leopard lives high in the Himalayas and are rarely ever photographed.
Fox is the guy from Mad Men.
Exactly.
Let's go to the subtext of all this. Great, you know, it was a great piece, great quotes. But there's part of Dan Hansis that looks at this situation and thinks, how is this going to really play in New England? You are looking forward to the potential day where the Martellus Bennett experiment blows up in Bill Belichick's face.
I did, and I mentioned that in the write-up on our end-around sub-site, I'll call it, NFL.com/end-around. I believe that this could go very poorly. I think a lot of people – I mean, Martellus has bounced around a lot. Michael's only been on two teams, the Bucks and Seattle. Martellus seems to wear out his welcome, and he's got to get in line there. I don't know if his attitude, especially if he doesn't find a role in that offense right away that suits him in his mind – he could start talking.
Well, they're saying that they're throwing endlessly to both tight ends and in practice both quarterbacks are. I mean, I think he's going to have a role in the offense, quite a big one, and maybe he's, you know, Belichick loves to bring certain guys in for two seasons, then they're gone.
He's in a contract year. I think it really might be one good year out of Bennett, and he gets big-time money elsewhere, and he said the tight end position looks as good as it's ever been. You know, they don't want to talk about how it was in 2010, 2011. That it was pretty great then. I do think Bill Belichick has evolved in his attitude towards players and how they talk to the media. I know he seems unbelievably disciplined and strict, but he allows more stuff than he did, especially early in his run in New England where he got really mad when people did.
Here's what I would say in response to Dan. I think when you're a creative, original thinker and a smart person, and Martellus Bennett seems to be those things.
Except for the Silver Fox thing.
Okay, that's fair. It's harder to deal with ineptitude around you, and I think that his personality deals much better with people like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and Gronk, who are the best at what they do, and you're surrounded by greatness.
That is a fair point. I will counter it with when Bill Belichick says he's never been more happy with a tight end room, that means he's happy with the depth all the way down that positional group. So when Martellus Bennett starts – you know, wonking off. Is that a term?
No.
Popping
it
off.
Is now.
Is that a term?
Honking?
Honking. There's no way Belichick's going to put up with it. He says, hit the road or mysteriously end up on IR, and I get the next Johnny come lately to take your spot.
I mean, Gronk,
that's my Sessler.
Gronk is no wallflower. It's all about how good you are. If he plays well, they'll be fine with it. They had Chad Johnson on their team. He's terrible.
You think that Gronk, I mean, do we have to say it with Gronk?
What?
It's a reason. Yeah, he's like a harmless little, like, kindergarten student. He's not going to get out of line.
Nothing little.
I've never seen any kindergarten students party like that.
You're saying he's not the type of individual that Wes described, yes, an intelligent man that needs to be surrounded by greatness.
Well, he doesn't, like, walk out on practice and get in fights with people and create massive issues in the locker room, which Martellus Bennett has done.
I tell you what Gronk is not after watching the endless Dunkin' Donuts commercials this summer with David Ortiz. If you're watching the Red Sox games,
wow,
not a great actor, Rob Gronkowski.
Shocking.
Not a great actor. Hey,
just put it this way. It's good that he has football. That's what's happening in the news. All right. It's time. Get excited, everybody. Because Greggy does Dallas.
How are we doing that?
Wasn't this Oxnard?
Yeah, but the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, okay.
I love what you've come up with, Dan.
Brandon is visibly uncomfortable. He is excited that shadowy league figures have been on vacation this week and not paying attention to the flaming mess going on in this studio.
I have to say, though, all those things that I got out of our music database and all the things that we had, so we're covered. We're covered.
You're following the rules.
Yep. All right. What did we want to know about Greg's trip to the Cowboys camp? They don't send us anywhere. We barely exist in this company, so it's good when we get out of the offices. And, Greg, I would like to know, first of all, is Tony Romo fat?
No, he's not.
Hesitation.
Yeah, picked up on that.
Has Tony Romo ever been a guy that you looked at and thought, that guy is the picture of a professional athlete in great shape?
He's not exactly Cam Newton or Colin Kaepernick.
Shape is not – I've never had an issue or noticed anything about him not being in shape. I know that he's not built like a statue.
Right. They didn't have – you know, they had that picture of him where he looked bad, but that was just a bad picture. He's out there in the heat with pads on. He's practicing. He does have some back stiffness. When he took off his pads at the end of the day and walked off the field, I mean, he kind of looks like a regular guy. I mean, he's not a guy that's cut up or anything, and maybe the back injury has prevented him from training as hard as he'd like, but I don't think that's a serious concern.
Mark.
Well, in the so-called fat photo, he was also wearing a flap jacket.
Right.
Which is, if you ever played football, it's like, it makes you look crazy.
Well, I've learned, you know, intrepid reporting from guys like Mark Sessler, who's, you know, kind of mentored me in this business. And
that is nonsense.
I kept an eye out on Tony Romo after the day was over, and he walked off the field with the pads off and stuff. I was kind of curious. Yeah, I mean, he kind of looks like a regular guy, but, you know, Ben Roethlisberger isn't exactly cut up either.
I mean, quarterbacks aren't like major league pitchers, which can come in. Like, you have major league pitchers that are just like big pears, but like
Bartolo Colon.
Well, sure, but they still pitch well. But with quarterbacks, you can. It's the position where you don't need to have like a six pack at age 38. They don't.
Well, look at Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
Exactly.
I think I would say though that you saw Tom Brady and Carson Palmer move as well as they ever have in their careers last year because they're in impeccable shape.
Well, I think that's a concern for Romo.
Well, but
and I think that's a concern for the Cowboys because back stiffness is the issue here. He's sitting out occasional practices still in training camp. You know, he maybe isn't moving as well as he used to. That was a big part of his game.
Absolutely.
Your back is hurt. A, he can't do anything all offseason, and it prohibits all movement. So we don't even know what his offseason was like.
He's been on the field, though. So that, to me, isn't a huge concern. And the Tony Romo that you love to see, that Dan, that you fell in love with as a player, was there. And I was thinking, what a big difference it must be for the team having him on the field. I mean, he's trash-talking. When the second and third teams are out on the field, he's kind of just a couple feet behind, kind of watching it all, yelling things. I remember before one play, like Maurice Claiborne honks a lot. Before one play, he just goes, come on, Mo, get ready to get your ass kicked. And you know what he did? He threw a bomb down the field to Terrence Williams, who caught a pass right over Maurice Claiborne. It was awesome. You know, the crowd loves it. Everyone loves it. He's – He's that guy.
Terrence Williams caught a pass.
The joy. The joy in Greg's voice.
Oh, he loves it.
The game. Other news surrounding Greggy Does Dallas. What else?
Amazing.
It's preposterous.
I can't follow that. Yeah, that reminds me, actually, of one takeaway I had. There's a lot of concern about the music at these practices.
Really?
There's the toughest job in football. Well, maybe one of the top 1,000 toughest jobs. The
way to backtrack.
It's a joke. It's a
there
joke.
There are reverse gears in this tank.
It's a joke.
Update.
It's being a DJ at these practices, because I'm telling you, no matter what song was on, there was a player going over to this guy and complaining, because I was standing right next to the DJ.
Oh, that's tough.
And they're like, oh, come on. Like, Cole Beasley was coming on. They had a lot of Drake on in a row. I feel like everything is –
What did Cole Beasley
want
to hear?
It's either Drake, Future, or the combination of Drake and Future. And Cole Beasley, oh, you're killing me with this stuff. And then they'll kind of switch it. He's like, you're killing me with this stuff. I got nothing here.
And if I was the DJ, I would just troll him and put on Born to Run.
Right, and so then they'll maybe play some you know, kind of rock country type of thing.
Or Cole Beasley.
Then some other players come over.
Jason Witten, fist pumping.
There were very few songs that made it through all the way where some player didn't come over and complain to them.
You know what this connects with, Wes? When you have – oh, wow, this is interesting. When WrestleMania or Wes-related drinking events, I have noticed a trend amongst the millennials that we traffic with, that we work with typically. They are way too into the music in terms of this song is bad. Let me put my phone in. Let me change this song.
It's so horrible.
Let me not leave on this playlist. Here, you have to hear this. That is a millennial thing.
It's a horrible me first self-righteous claim that you can just take someone's music and hijack it because you feel like listening to a song.
Here's another problem with the music. They don't beep out the swears, but it'll be the clean version where just nothing is said. But there's 6-year old, you know, there was 6-year old like daughters and little kids right next to the speakers, and it's all like, I'm gonna blank you in your blank just nonstop the whole time.
Wait, what does that mean? Blank you in your blank? What is that?
I was just thinking, like, if I'm a parent at this thing. It was too much. I'm sorry.
Anything else?
I just wanted to say that.
Wait a minute. What?
Hold on. You know. Hold on. I wanted to tell you, but he went off his thing.
If this has anything to do with Sugar Ray, just stop now.
No.
He got him.
No.
He got him. It did. That was a good job.
Yeah. I just wanted to go on the record and say that I didn't even mess with any of your guys' playlists. I appreciated you putting my music on.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brandon.
This is all God.
Anything else from Greggy Does Dallas? Anything else?
Ezekiel Elliott looked incredible until he got injured, which was unfortunate. But
how do you mean incredible?
I watched some of the running back drills up close, and man, obviously he's just big and powerful and can move so well. But it was really in the 7-on-7s, the 11-on-11s. He had two different plays which got a lot of his teammates to make that, ooh, which is like that's the best thing you can do as a player is make all your teammates do that. And it was by making Kyle Wilbur on one play and another one of their linebackers, I think Gakchar, on another play, just in the hole, making them absolutely whiff on him on a play that they're supposed to kind of, as they would say, thud him up, like hit him. And just that quick sort of lateral movement while he's a powerful back. It was exciting to see, but then he pulled his hamstring right at the end of the
practice. That sucks.
Did you see Jerry Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say one more thing about
all
this?
The Joneses? I got a lot.
The and yeah, we should wrap up this segment.
Yes.
See, you had a lot more than you realized. Now I forgot what I was going to say. All right, go ahead.
Joneses?
Oh, no. The ooh is the second best thing that you can get. The best thing a player can get from his fellow players is the towel in front of them being waved off.
Oh, yeah.
That is the number one thing.
That's true.
The Bernard Pollard.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
The Joneses were all in the mix. I like how at training camp they have the thing where the owners – are in the – they build an entire structure, 40 feet above.
It's like a Roman Colosseum.
Right, and the owners just sit up there watching their minions underneath.
You long to be up there.
It's just
that
cool.
That is Greg Throne of Ease right there.
One thing I thought watching it, because Jerry Jones and Romo had a 15-minute long conversation at one point. Meanwhile, while some players are doing other individual drills, and Romo's just not even in the mix. And then Jason Garrett and Witten are having like a 15-minute conversation in the middle of practice too. And I was thinking, what two players in the NFL probably have more power within their own team than Tony Romo and Jason Witten? Like, if you're going to be a player that is kind of into being the man and being able to run things, you want to play for the Cowboys. It'd be nice if they'd be winning more games. But those two guys, it's like they're almost like assistant coaches advising and talking with the owners and coaches.
And that wraps up the 2016 edition of Greggy Does Dallas. Oh, yeah. All right, this next segment is called, and there's no accompanying adult theme music, this year's Doug Martin. We on the fly, we renamed it.
I like that.
So let's go around. Let's go around. This is the running back who will just dominate fantasy rosters, real rosters. Marron.
We could add some Dougie Fresh in post, maybe.
Maybe some Dougie Fresh.
Wes is a fan.
Oh, yeah.
Some Dougie Doug. Remember that actor?
Lottie Dottie.
All right, Mark, get us going. This year's Doug Martin is?
Eddie Lacy. Mm. And I, you know, when I came up with this name before the show, I was hearing a little bit, but we've already talked about Eddie Lacy a lot. It's like, but how do you do
that? For the record, that was me. Because
how do you do?
I'm talking about it. Everybody knows Eddie Lacy is going to be good this year.
All right.
If he's not fat.
I actually completely agree with you. But how do you do? I think I'm taking a bullet for the team because I've got to come up with the non-surprise answer. Because how do you do this segment without talking about Eddie Lacy and a team that may have the number one group of triplets by the end of the season? Eddie Lacy has lost 20 pounds. He is about 3 or 4 pounds away from what they would say is ideal playing shape. He can lose that in camp. He's getting good reports. The coaches are happy. And really, it's about returning to the guy he was at stretches of the season before and the year before that. That is possible. We've seen him do it. This offense has so many other weapons that these players get healthy that it's not a stack-the-box scenario on Eddie Lacy. Last year, you know, with the wide receiver situation, the running game became targeted for the first time, really, in that offense. Now, he's part of a passing game that brings players back. You got Aaron Rodgers. Eddie Lacy is a logical candidate for a massive bounce back. He had, what, 758 yards last year? He is not going to double that, but he could get up to 1,200, 1,300 yards.
I don't think this choice needs to be defended. I think it was a good option, especially
very good.
Packers coaches are saying that they're going to, you know, have a 50-50 split with James Starks. And I think I would agree with Mark, that's not happening. If Eddie Lacy's anywhere near in shape, he's one of the 10 best running backs in the NFL.
So you trust Mark over the Packers?
Yes,
coaches.
I do.
On some level, I think it makes sense because he needs a big preseason. Because if we watch this and he's okay, I disagree. I kind of expect James Starks will get a lot of work early in the year because they've seen it happen over and over.
Not if you see Eddie Lacy running like Doug Martin.
Isn't this Eddie Lacy's career in Green Bay?
Right. Save him for the second half of the season or use Starks early.
Well, that's maybe their choice, but that doesn't
mean they got to win games, Greg.
I mean, I think Eddie Lacy is going to go wire to wire if he's the guy they want him to be.
Mark, thank you for your sacrifice.
All right, you're putting it correctly now. Thank you.
Wes.
I was all set to choose Amir Abdullah, whom I loved last August, and injuries and poor blocking ruined his fumbling issues too, ruined his rookie season. I still have confidence in him. I want to see how that shoulder does before I, you know, kind of anoint him as the preseason guy. I'm going with another guy who lost 20 pounds, Terrence West. Mark's old buddy who
– oh, boy.
Mark doesn't have great feelings for Terrence West, I'm sure, because he didn't – he was kind of a problem child in Cleveland and the coaching staff.
Oh, right.
It's a head case.
Well, do you remember – wasn't he the one who, when he got picked up off waivers in last season, it really upset you? You thought he was going to do really well?
No. He got picked up by the Tennessee Titans.
That's what I'm saying.
And I wanted Kristen Michael to go to the Browns.
And also Chris Carter's son.
I wanted Deron Carter as
I'm messing it up. Sorry.
That's all right. Terrence West, according to multiple media sources, has been the best offensive player in Ravens camp through the first week. Explosive, elusive through the hole. Looks like a different player because he's lost 15 pounds in the best shape of his career, according to John Harbaugh. And I don't think it's going to be real tough to beat out Justin Forsett and Buck Allen for that number one role if he runs like I think he's going to run in preseason games. So I'm kind of like – I realize this is a kind of a long shot. But
well, one thing
that's
about
a sleeper,
he is back home. He went to college in that area, and I just think that for a rookie coming into the Browns program 2 years ago, there was not a lot of support, coaching support. The organization was fractured, and he got caught in a running back room where there were other head cases too. And so it is not crazy that someone 3 years into their career, after having a great offseason season where you get your body in shape, would look like the guy that he did. And for a couple games in Cleveland, he had a couple hundred-yard games. He looked good.
There was a reason why the Browns traded up in the draft to
get over the Ravens, who wanted him.
Forsett might get cut if Terrence West is ahead of him on the depth.
Is it also maybe a sneaky like dig at the entire Ravens offense if he's the most explosive player?
I don't look at it that way. I look at it as this guy has a chance to be the guy who's going to wow us in preseason.
I will stick in the AFC North and talk about
Le'Veon Bell. Good job, Dan.
That's your second time around. I will talk about Jeremy Hill. And Jeremy Hill is a guy, it could not be worse than it was for Jeremy Hill last year. Not only did he disappoint both the Bengals and fantasy owners last year, then he went through something in January which can really ruin a career, that fumble that cost Cincinnati their first playoff win in how long, Wes? Literally decades.
1991 was the last time they won a playoff game.
So that's some mental baggage to overcome, some physical baggage, just having Gio Bernard in the mix. But I think he's a guy we could see him return to the type of impact player that put him on everybody's radar last year. And there are very positive reports out there that he had. The Cincinnati Inquirer reported that he had a, quote, really good off-season program, handled all the stuff that came through with the fumble, all the off-the-field madness that I'm sure haunted him throughout the winter. He took that on and he handled it and moved forward. The Inquirer expects a huge year. I don't know what his workload will be in this offense, if he'll get enough carries to be a guy that's, you know, rushing for 1,200 yards. But I do fully expect him to bounce back after a tough year, have double-digit touchdowns potentially, and be a guy, again, that they can count on, as opposed to what we saw last year, which ended up being somewhat of a liability.
He wasn't in great shape last year, and I'm not sure he was a good fit for the offense that Hugh Jackson ran, which was more suited to Gio Bernard's skill set as a pass-first offense. With the new coordinator in here, I think it'll be interesting to see what if they maybe emphasize Jeremy Hill again.
Well, I mean, they gave Gio a big contract.
Yeah, that tells you something. Isn't it largely the same offense under Ken Zampezi? That's what they've said.
Do we know?
Well, I guess we don't know, but it based on it,
are you going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets without Mohamed
right.
Sanu?
That's true.
And
the personnel limit is going to limit you. The personnel will change things.
In a perfect world, they're going to run the ball a lot this year because it's a good offensive line. And if Dan is right, and I think Dan might be right on this one because he's shown it. And that's one of the most exciting backfields in the league. I guess the Rams is not the option anymore. That's an incredible backfield because I am so high on Gio Bernard. I think he can go up another level from what he was, which is also already a really underrated, really valuable player. And those two guys together, it'd be hard to top those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, if Jeremy Hill runs like 2014, it's one of the most exciting offenses.
Right.
Greg.
I'll go Carlos Hyde. I thought of doing Matt Jones, who's a similar player, but he really was that guy last year. We've seen him do it in the preseason. We got to see Matt Jones do it in the regular season. Carlos Hyde I'm interested in because he's coming off an injury. He's in a new Chip Kelly offense, and, man, he has an opportunity to put up monster numbers because he's a rare back these days that's going to stay on the field, that he's a power back that's going to get the goal line carries, and he's going to catch the ball. And he's in Chip Kelly's offense. Chip Kelly's not afraid to give the ball to one guy a lot. Look at LeSean McCoy's first couple of years under Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. I mean, he got it about as much as anyone. And so Hyde is someone I want to see. All reports have been good for him. If he looks fresh this training camp in preseason, I'm taking him in all my fantasy leagues.
Why the flip-flop?
Why flip-flop? What do you mean?
You had Carlos Hyde, and then he said, no, I want to talk about Matt Jones. And
well, I didn't.
Came
I went
to Carlos.
That was my sneaky way of putting two guys in there.
Oh. Well,
wouldn't we all be surprised if Carlos Hyde doesn't look like a stud during preseason games? I will be surprised if he doesn't look phenomenal.
Well, that's all I need to see is kind of to cement it, and then I'm in. I'm in on him. It's the same thing with Matt Jones. He already looked good in the preseason. So did Amir Abdullah. Sometimes they look a little different. Your boy Spiller is a guy to watch this this spring.
Yeah,
well, I just think he's a guy that you don't know what you're going to get out of him, and if he looks great in camp, then you start getting excited in the preseason.
If this exercise is indeed called this year's Doug Martin, I want to throw in one more. It's total homer pick. But Bilal Powell is a guy, if you watched the Jets in December last year, he was a major part of that offense. He didn't play Week 17, and I really do think that is the reason that they went home and blew that game in Orchard Park with Powell not playing. Now, they go out and get Matt Forte, who has a similar skill set. I understand that. But I'm not so sure that Forte is going to get as much work or be as effective as maybe more optimistic Jets fans think. And I think Powell will end up being an important guy or even more important than Forte in that backfield. I'm a big Powell fan.
He's been a survivor. I mean, I feel like the
– And he got a new deal too, which means they really like him.
He's a role player.
He is.
He's not a feature back. He's a role player.
Not a feature back, so he's not going to be this year's Doug Martin. But I just don't want him to be forgotten because he was really – and, Greg, I remember us talking about this. And in the stretch run, he was making people miss. He was shifty. He was a great receiver out of the backfield.
Much better receiver than runner.
He's this year's Bilal Powell.
I think he might end up being their main guy, it sounds like.
If that happens, so that has to be a disappointment for that organization.
Well, Forte is not healthy right now, so that's a minor thing. But I believe it was the New York Star-Ledger thought, even before that they were going to split the carries between Forte, who is up there.
This is the reason I'm talking about him, because I think he's better than people realize. I think at the end of
last year, he was. Every other year of his career, he was not.
I'm in on Powell.
He came on in the second half. Even the first half of last year, I think they kind of figured out some things about him, and I think that's why he came back even after they got Forte. I think they like him a lot. All right. Anything else, guys? Before we go, we have one more thing to talk about. Hall of Fame tweeners to Hall of Fame bangers.
What?
Yep.
That is not the headline.
Can we bring that song up, please?
No. Of course. Yeah, one more time, please. Hall of Fame tweeners to Hall of Fame bangers. By Greg Rosenthal. And if you really want to know Greg's headline, Greg's the worst headliner.
I did not write that one.
I might be, but he, okay.
Tony Romo, Eli Manning among players on HOF Bubble.
I did not write that.
Okay. Fair enough. Anyway, so I like the premise for this column a lot, in which you're going to throw out some really notable names, and you're saying if their career – tell me if I'm wrong. If their career ended right now, they would probably have a hard time getting in where they're currently at, although I disagree with the first name on this list, if that's the premise for this. But what they really need is maybe a little bit of a push to get over the hump and be a real Canton dude.
That's right. And less about predicting what the selection committee is going to do, because it's very hard to predict, but more what I think. Have they earned a Hall of Fame spot yet? And would a big-time push at the end of their career help put them over the top? Some of these guys have a long way to go. Some of the other guys, like you mentioned, Eli Manning is the first name on this list.
And
I don't think he has a long way to go, certainly not in the eyes of the selection committee because of the playoffs. But it's really crazy when you think about his career and how overall overrated it is because of those two playoff runs.
Most overrated player I've ever seen.
I don't want to go too deep into it, you know, because we've talked a lot of Eli. I think he will make the Hall of Fame ultimately, and his durability and some of the things that makes him special in terms of completing tough catches and being very intelligent, that's all great. But he has not been a top 10 quarterback in his career, period. Like, not even if you break it down year by year, there is only one year, and that would be 2011, which he had an incredible year, that you could even argue that he would be a top five quarterback. He has never made an all-pro team, first or second team. He has been selected to two Pro Bowls. He had two more as an alternate, just like Andy Dalton. I don't count that. Two Pro Bowls. Twice in his career, he has finished in the top 10 of QBR on ESPN. Once in his career, he's finished in the top 10 of quarterback rankings. And this is all stats. Stats don't say everything. It's a team sport, but this is an individual honor. And he's gotten those trophies and the commercials and the money. He's been rewarded for those titles. But to me, a Hall of Fame spot, that's an individual honor. That's not about
– If we're going to talk stats, let me just throw out – first of all, he has 294 career touchdowns. By the time he retires, which will be about 4 or 5 years, he'll have thrown like 400 touchdowns.
Which won't even be remarkable in the era in which he played.
The era is big.
He is now – 35 years old, I believe. Okay. His last two seasons, And I know, Wes, you like to say it's because of his wide receiver.
Well, it is.
But let me just throw it out there. He has averaged 4,400 yards passing, and he's thrown 65 touchdowns in his last 2 years with a passer rating over 90. He's still
the average quarterback has a 90 passer rating.
He is an elite producer. Yeah, but tell me how many quarterbacks throw over 30 touchdowns, 30 to 35
the
touchdowns.
The ones with Odell Beckham on the roster.
With 4,000 to 4,500. Now, I understand.
He's been good. Those last 2 years have helped. If he does another couple like that and piles up some more good individual numbers, I think that'll help his case a lot. That's what this is about.
The case I'm making is that he has the numbers to go with the playoff success.
No, he
doesn't. He doesn't have
numbers.
You could have the East Coast bias like Wes and say, well, he's a Giant. I don't like the Giants, and I don't like New York. I don't want to give him any
what
respect.
What does that have to do with
it?
Everyone else has the Manning name bias, so I'll take mine over that.
There doesn't have to be bias. I go by production and success.
But you're not. You're saying his stats are good enough, and they're clearly not. His stats pale in comparison.
His stats are not
Romo
good enough. I don't
Phillip
think
Rivers.
That's an argument.
One note, isn't it the problem that this Hall of Fame is voted on by sports writers? And the Manning name is royalty in football and Super Bowl titles.
Throw all that out.
No, but I'm saying that that helps Eli Manning, whether you like it or not.
Well, that's true.
If you throw out those two things, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Right, but the problem is there's also quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame who statistically, and I guess it's eras, but like we're going to have to keep looking at eras so differently, but there's going to be quarterbacks that don't get in the Hall of Fame that absolutely dwarf the accomplishments of Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Right. Well, of course, Matthew Stafford is going to have better numbers than most of the Hall of Fame quarterbacks, period.
The Hall of Fame is nonsense.
Here's another thing. There's no one in the top – like, he's never in the top five of any – the only categories he's ever led the league in, Dan, interceptions. He's done that three times.
He was never the best. He has never been the best, but that doesn't mean he's not a Hall of Famer. And let me just tell you something.
And you want to argue wins and losses. They're not a winning team.
I hate to break this to you. First of all, he beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl, won the MVP in both those games. He is already eighth all-time in touchdown passes. And you could say, oh, 400 touchdown passes don't mean anything, but only one, two, three, four guys have ever done it. And behind him right now, Phillip Rivers will maybe get it. Ben Roethlisberger will maybe get it. Aaron Rodgers will maybe get it. All those guys are going to the Hall of Fame. 400 touchdowns does matter. So you could try to denigrate his stats. It doesn't work.
Counting stats aren't what put football players in the Hall of Fame.
What about winning Super Bowls?
I mean, that's what Hall of Fame
criteria.
Winning
find
Super Bowls
something.
Absolutely does. Troy Aikman.
Well, to your point.
Find something
you're
that
saying,
actually takes him out of the Hall of Fame.
You're saying 400 touchdowns. That's another 100. That's the point of this article. I'm saying he needs another.
The most durable quarterback
I'm
in
saying
NFL
he
history.
Needs another 2 to 3 good years of loading up some of these individual stats like Peyton, have a good post-35. You're right. Some of his best years are the last 2 years, and I think he's been solid. He's been more on that top 10 borderline the last couple of years. And if he puts up another couple with Odell's help, I think he's probably in.
You guys know I respect your football knowledge more than anything, but this is the one thing I cannot stand for because it's the one thing I feel more strongly about.
Okay, can I make
anything.
A point?
Yeah.
I haven't been able to make any points yet.
Not yet. I'm waiting for it.
Okay, so I know the militaristic stats nerds tell you that you can never mention quarterback wins and losses, which makes sense over one season, but it bears out over NFL history that best quarterbacks have great one-loss records. Eli Manning is 97-86, which is downright mediocre.
Oh, so now we're going to that wins and losses do matter for quarterbacks. Because I thought we
were—that's my entire point. That the stats nerds are wrong.
I thought
they
weren't
do
supposed
matter.
To look at like that. So now we're.
Well, I'm not a stats nerd. I'm telling you that they've always mattered and they always will for career. He's been a mediocre quarterback,
right.
Which bears out in his record.
I've been told by people that know football that you should not judge a quarterback on wins and losses.
Are you sure those people know football, or they just know numbers?
Not only, but I think that speaks to what I was trying to get at with Eli. Which is that if you're going to make the stats argument, he's not great there. And if you're going to make the wins-loss argument, he's really not great there. He, like you said, is only 10 over for his whole career. He has the two Super Bowls, which he deserves all the credit in the world. He was great in those two runs. Those are the only two seasons he's won a playoff game in. It's not like the rest of the 12 years they've been a good team. They've been a mediocre team.
Can we just bring little Debbie back in the studio?
Oh.
I mean, this is just ugly.
Yeah, let's move on from Eli.
He does have the stats.
You're looking at counting stats, not like percentage stats.
I'm not trying.
Which are much more telling.
Let's talk about someone everyone likes. You know, people are happy about.
All right, let's talk about somebody else.
I don't know. Well, I did have two other quarterbacks on this while I was.
Who else is there?
I put Rivers, who I think is I put him in the best bet category where I think if he can have a strong run. And I was trying to think of players like him and Romo who could really change the way people think about them with a long playoff run. because Rivers has all the numbers. He's been in the top of the league. But it's been a while since he's had some big-time moments in January.
So and we are acknowledging that a Super Bowl run should matter for a quarterback then.
Absolutely. It's absolutely going to make a difference.
Does anyone
with
ever
the
say
voters.
That a Super Bowl run shouldn't matter?
I'm saying that that's not enough. Jim Plunkett's won two Super Bowls. Jimmy Johnson's won two Super Bowls. George Seifert's won two Super Bowls.
Don't get on the coaching
Flores.
Is impossible.
Those are the two guys that those are the two most important people are quarterbacks and coaches.
Yeah, so. But coaches, that's a whole different Hall of Fame argument. There should be more coaches.
We're not just talking Hall of Fame championships because of course
there should be more offensive coordinators in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, that's
because there's Doug. You know, there's Doug Williams. There's Brad Johnson. There's lots of quarterbacks that have titles, and Dan Marino does it, and no one's going to argue.
I get that, but there's something about. I'm not going to go back to Eli Manning, but I'm not a Hall of Fame voter, and there's a reason for it. But there's something about a quarterback that generates multiple championships.
Right. I think Rivers. And Romo have been let down by their organizations. If they were on the Giants, I fully think they would take advantage of that opportunity, just like Eli Manning had. I think Rivers is a safer one. He's had a little bit longer of his career, a little more consistent than Romo, but Romo could really change the way people think about him with a big run.
Who else we got here?
I was going to accuse Greg of playing favorites, but he already acknowledged that this article was partially about playing favorites, that you want to argue for the guys that you like.
Yeah, I even said at the top, this isn't comprehensive. I wanted to make some cases.
Well, under Jamal Charles, you say, I favor players with brilliant peaks over stat compilers who stick around for a long time, mm-hmm. which makes sense to me. I agree with you totally. And yet Frank Gore is exactly a stat compiler and not a brilliant peak guy.
Yeah.
Well, very consistent, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's what a stat compiler is.
Sure, but I mean, I would say Frank Gore as an argument.
I did consider that. I mean, I thought about that even as I wrote that Gore is different. I think Gore's chances of getting in are because of compiling those stats. I think he has been a top five running back throughout his career and that it's been underappreciated and that people will notice more if he gets 700-800 yards this year, if he's the first guy over 33 to run for 1,000 yards in 30 years since John Riggins, if he climbs past Tony Dorsett and Jim Brown and his number 8 on the all-time list, that's going to help him possibly get in. I think he has been a Hall of Fame quality player throughout the rest of his career.
I wonder how many running backs of the Super Bowl era have only cleared 1,300 yards in a season one time.
Probably not a lot.
You have Anquan Boldin last on this list. And I don't think, he's probably not going to get in, but I like that he put him here because he's an underappreciated guy for what he's done in this league.
Well, he'll get knocked. He'll compile some stats like Gore, and if he's lucky, he could move up into the top 10, top 12 all-time receiving, which is great. He put up numbers as a number one receiver, monster numbers, before Larry Fitzgerald was there. I don't knock him for being a great team player. He was a number one receiver for 2 years on some pretty good 49ers teams, number one. One of them that went to the Super Bowl. Went to the NFC Championship, rather, and he has some of those moments in the playoffs that people remember. They would not have won the Super Bowl in Baltimore without him. He had some great moments in Arizona. He had some in San Francisco. I mean, I think you shouldn't knock him for being a team player.
He fits the Hines Ward profile, and I think if one goes in, it would be Hines Ward over Bolden.
The Hall of Fame has a problem, though, because 10, 15 years from now, we're going to have all these players with monster stats and Super Bowls, and they're not. There's gonna be such a glut that a big chunk of guys that if it were 1984 would have gotten in unanimously with no issues, and they're gonna be left out of this thing because the game changes, and we're still measuring it off of some willy nilly sports writer voting thing.
Well, it's on the sports writers to kind of.
Are we happy with how the results that they produced? I think it's hit or miss.
My point would be if you're saying that. It's going to be more challenging in the future because of the offensive heavy era that we're playing in.
You gotta adjust.
It's on the sports writers to kind of take a page out of Dr. Z and Paul Zimmerman's book and actually watch the games.
That every year you remove two people from the Hall of Fame.
Well, I hear
cold blooded.
That's Damashek's idea.
I wanted to. One of the things I took out of this, way too long article was I think it's the hardest sport to cover because there's the biggest gap between the people inside the game and the people that cover it.
Period. Point.
We understand the sport less, I think, and I think that's exacerbated by a lot of the Hall of Fame committee. They're covering one team most of their career. How could, at least if you're covering the entire league.
Well, they certainly have homer votes.
Right. You have a broad view where you can see how players are versus each other. But if you're really covering one team and one division, you know,
Does the committee still have a baseball beat writer on it?
What? I know which one you're thinking of.
Yeah, I mean, come on. No, clean up your business, committee.
I did check. It looked tightened up. It looked tightened up now.
Mark, it sounds like from what you were saying that you're not happy with the committee. Is there someone recently in the last couple of years that got in that you're furious about, or someone that's not in that you believe where are the miscarriages of justice in your mind?
I'm not going to denigrate players that have gotten in. If you're going to put in Andre Reed, we've got a conversation about a lot of other wide receivers. Mm. I'm not saying that Andre Reed, where he was in time, belong it compared to other players, but if you're going to put him in, then that creates a problem for other wide receiver selection issues down the road.
Right, I think that's right. I think that's why I put a name like Anquan Boldin in there, because I think you never know. If he has one more 1,000-yard season, he ends up doing that for four different teams, that, like him versus an Art Monk and Andre Reed, he's in that mix.
If you don't put Romo in, and I understand the Super Bowl thing, but it's an eras and Super Bowls thing, because I understand the passing game was different and you had Emmitt Smith on your team, but Troy Aikman's statistics versus Romo's, outside of the Super Bowl thing, Romo will be absolutely missed in Dallas, and I think he is a Hall of Fame quarterback, minus the title. And so it's just you're making different arguments for different players. It's hard not to feel hypocritical when you swing back and forth for what players should get in on.
I think Romo, first of all, he didn't start until his mid-20s to really get playing time. He's missed a couple of years, and then you factor in the back injuries have affected his stats and the missing time. I don't think he'll have the numbers to stack up. And then if he doesn't have any titles, I think he could be on the outside.
You keep saying numbers as in counting stats, but I think that voters do and will take more into account percentage stats, which are much more reflective of how a player plays.
And Romo is second all-time in something called net yards per passing attempt, which is a great metric to use. I mean, going back to pass, how many yards do you get on average? He's second all time to Peyton Manning.
And his
that's
fourth,
not how guys get in the Hall of Fame, though. That's what I'm pointing to.
But
that's on the committee to start paying attention to the right stats and not the wrong ones.
And what they rip him for, some of his numbers in the clutch are startling. I mean, Romo there were two seasons ago, was right up there with Aaron Rodgers and others. Right. I think the early part of his career was so maligned because of one playoff game in Seattle. If that had not happened, people would have seen Tony Romo differently. And it's an image perception thing with so many of these players.
Which is crazy because he was the holder, and they decided to keep him the holder the whole year because he started that out like that because he was a no-name undrafted player. I mean, it's ridiculous. Before we go, I do want to point out Julius Peppers. Looking at this, I started thinking, gosh, as much as I've always thought of a Julius Peppers, going through the whole thing, man, is he an incredible player who almost shouldn't be on this list because he should be so obvious.
Maybe he is,
but I don't know if people view him that way. He has had an unreal career. Andre Johnson's another one. I think
I'd vote for Andre Johnson right now.
Yeah, I think he's probably pretty safe, but I wanted to make the case for him. I also put in James Harrison just to annoy Mark Sessler.
I think James Harrison, you know, I don't know.
He has the longest shot of everyone.
James Harrison,
list.
If you want to talk about how if someone has annoyed me for most of my adult life and that's a Hall of Fame vote, he gets in and so does Big Ben.
Poor Colt McCoy.
Oh.
Did Troy Polamalu ever annoy you?
I mean, there's a lot of Hall of Fame Steelers from this past 15 years. Yes, there are.
I couldn't get Wes on my side even that Harrison had any argument at all. Which was that he was a top five player on defense for a five-year period. So it's kind of the Terrell Davis argument. He doesn't have a ton else other than that. He's got some other moments, but that's impressive when you're Defensive Player of the Year, when you're runner-up, and you're just that type of player.
I agree with that point, that for a five-year span, he was dominant. I just think he's not going to get in because he didn't become a starter until he was 29 years old.
What else can be said? Greg wrote a banger. That's it for this week's edition of the three editions of the Around the NFL podcast. We thank you all for listening. And how are we doing, Greg, on the iTunes comments challenge? I'm putting you on the spot here. See how quickly you can move that mouse. Looks very slow.
I can't even check it right. Well, I could check it on my phone. Hang on. I know we were approaching.
What's going on over there, Greg?
They wiped my whole computer because of security issues, and I don't even have iTunes
on right
now.
Got John King of CNN over here.
All right.
What do you mean, what's going on? I don't have IT.
I don't get the reference.
You got a MacBook, and I thought CNN you'd be people. Able to check it out for me. But you couldn't. It's okay.
We'll cut this out.
Yeah, we'll cut this out.
I think this is good. Let's keep it in and show them how this room really operates.
Hey, wait, oh yeah, well, let's wait. Find it. I'll
Greg
find
on
it.
His phone slowly.
Dan, I have it if you want it.
Yeah, I would love, love it.
There's
thank
a 1,005 rating.
Whoa!
Hey now.
Way to go, listeners. Let's go to 2,000. See, we got some momentum by asking for it.
You should be very proud there, Greg, because you really made action happen. You said you're not the boss anymore.
Everybody who leaves an iTunes review is invited to WrestleMania 3.
Your neighbors will love that. All right. We'll be back on Monday with 3 more shows. Until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and the Irishman behind the glass. Del Monday.